Why they girl be so shady? I'm back. That's why they call me so shady. I'm back. That's why they call me so shady. I'm back. That's why they call me so shady. I'm back. I'm back.
I murder a rhyme, one word.
Welcome to Radio Istina, here on the 26th day of February, year of our Lord, 2000. Check that, 8. What we're going to talk about today, we're not going to have such close scrutiny of text as we've had in the past. We'll do a little bit of that in relation to furthering this true story of the Oklahoma City bombings. But what I want to do today is talk about some recent things that have popped up on VNN Forum, and also talk about the forum itself and its proper use and purpose, and how we've made changes to it recently. I'm spending most of my time most of my editorial time working on it and upgrading it in the sense of reorganizing it and creating certain types of threads and putting them in order and altering the different sub-forums in a way that I think will make it better for users and hence better for our cause. And I actually want to go through pretty much the whole thing. But you know what? Let's save that for just a little bit later. And I'm told we're sounding fine, so we won't have to go through 10 minutes of prefatory bullshit trying to get things set up. So thanks for letting me know, guys. And that was Stan who let me know. And if you missed it last night, Stan hosted a memorial for Yankee Jim, and it was fantastic. We had his sister come on and give us some insight into his life and his meaning to her and to her mother. We had numerous other guests. We had Jimbo. We had James Hawthorne co-hosting. I came on for maybe an hour or so and talked about some of the media coverage related to it. Just to reprise that briefly, and remember, you can hear this all in archive. All of our Free Talk Lives are archived. The media referred, and this is going to lead into our first story about language abuse. This someone just sent me earlier today that I think we'll talk about a little bit. There's some points related to writing, but they said in the Daily Freeman article that Jim's post was rambling. And this is a stereotype word that they use unalterably when they're discussing anyone who is belongs to a group non grata. I suppose if there's a persona non grata, person without grace, you can be a group without grace. Well, anytime you belong to a group that it's officially okay to hate, to spew venom against, why then whatever the members of that group compose, why it's always rambling. It's always, or else it's a screed. These are bias words. They're coded words, like discredited and pseudo, applied to those with professional credentials whom the Jews wish to destroy and discredit in the eyes of their audience. They always call them, well, McDonald's a pseudo-scientist. He's not a real scientist. Or David Irving is a discredited writer because he discovers facts that the Jews want buried. So it is with the average guy. And Jim was a truck driver, and he was a musician. He wasn't a PhD, so if he writes something, why, of course, it can't be organized and sensible, reasonable, and thoughtful. It has to be rambling. Well, consider this. This just shows you how dishonest these media are. I mean, this is the last post of the guy's life, and it's about his cheating wife, and it's fairly strongly implied in there that, you know, it's pushed him over the edge. Now, this is the last type of thing in the world that would be rambling, and in fact, it is not rambling. So the media lie in one way, and then the other part, which we discussed a little last night, was the way the media apologized for actually giving its readers a little taste of factual reality. That is by, since they're online, posting some of Jim's last posts, they allowed readers to see that, gee, maybe there's another angle to this. Maybe this isn't an evil white man murdering his wife as they all do on TV, which reflects here in real life. No, maybe there's a little more to it, like she was cheating on him. And they're basically apologizing for allowing any of those facts to get through. So that's a second way in which we find them wanting. And there's just the point that they don't get it. The internet, we don't need them. We have unfiltered access to whatever information we seek. All we have to do is take a search engine, plug in the name, and we can dig up everything that's been written on there. And not just from the trash media, but from the blogs. From the junk media, like the Daily Freeman, we can go to the real stuff, the Hudson Valley Freeman that Jim wrote when he was alive. So they have behaved, as they always do, utterly discreditably and ignobly. And we've got kikes like some Fussfeld. What a perfect name for a Jew, Fussfeld. Saying that Jim's death is no loss to this community. This is the same type of Jew who uses his newspaper to cover up that whites are being physically attacked by blacks. A fact that Jim tried to draw attention to by holding the rally in Kingston that the kikes always describe as a white power rally or a neo-Nazi rally. Because not one of the death reports, and they've all mentioned that rally that he had, because as he said, it was the biggest thing since, I think, George Washington camped there in the Revolutionary War. None of them had mentioned the reason that he called that rally, because to do that would cast him in a different light. It would mean a light. It would mean he's not a hater. He's not an evil, vicious racist. He's someone who's trying to protect his own people, something that's admirable when Jews do it and blacks do it and Mexicans do it, but somehow ignoble, dangerous, and evil when whites do it. So enough about the hypocrisy. You can listen to the archive of that FTL if you'd like. We're going to take it a little more casual today. I'm going to try to talk it a little bit less than breakneck speed, as I often do. And I'm going to try not to smack my lips. That's a technical problem I have. By technical problem, I mean anything that detracts from the listening value of the show. I notice I tend to go a lot for whatever reason. I'm going to cut that out today. It's like I try not to hem and haw. But before we get into VNN Forum and how I've revised it and just our overall general operating philosophy and where we're headed, us of the VNN family, I want to talk a little about an article that a listener sent me. Where is it here? This is the Jew who was blown up by the Unabomber, David Galernter. He's solid on some things. He's fairly solid on this part. He's less solid when it comes to Israel. He's a typical neocon. You know, he wants war against the world and et cetera, et cetera. I'll just read a couple different selections. Our ability, he says, how can I teach my students to write? And he's a professor at Yale, I believe. If he was, at least. I don't know that he's changed. How can I teach my students to write decently when the English language has become a wholly owned subsidiary of the academic industrial complex? And so he's talking about jargon. He says, our ability to write and read good, clear English connects us to one another and to our common past. Okay, that's true. But what you know you're not going to find in here is the extent to which Jews have made their own homegrown Jew speak. That is, the communist, George Orwell mentioned the simplification of language and the weeding out of thoughts through the use and disuse of terms, but primarily through the abandoning of terms. Each term has a slightly different meaning from every other term, so truly there are no synonyms. There are myriad shades. And to the extent one is educated and writing formally, one may choose precisely the right term instead of something that's close or something that, you know, is kind of a catch-all phrase, like the, you know, fix. You can use fix in 1,000 different ways, but there might be more precise ways to describe what you're doing. So totalitarian states weed out the language. They reduce things to a couple simple things that any idiot can understand. And what David Galernter is not going to mention is that Jews are the primary ones behind the feminism that he's attacking in this particular article, which I have linked. And I want to say that all of our shows are archived, and along with that, I'm still have not finished this yet, but I'm going back through and picking up the old Radio Astinas, and we'll compile them in one thread. That's key. The concept of one thread, getting up to speed by reading one thread, is going to become more common at VNNF, and I put in the last few weeks working on that, actually, in relation to certain countries. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but point is, totalitarians simplify language. If you don't have the words for stuff, it's harder to think about it, because these ideas and these concepts go uncirculated since the terms to discuss them are taboo or simply don't exist. The hatred Jews have for Gentiles, for example, is nearly determinative in the world today, yet there's no term for it. David Duke uses Jewish supremacism, and many follow him in that, but I've coined Loxism, which is a deliberately ugly, blunt mirror to racism. It's not intended, as many of my neologisms are, to be clever. It's intended to be blunt, crude, ugly, and effective. than to concentrate in one simple six-letter word, the Jewish hatred of whites. And that hatred is what drives our policies, foreign and domestic. On the foreign front, how did Jews hate whites? Well, look what they did in Serbia. They bombed it, and they helped the Muslims create their own independent state in the middle of Europe. The Jews who hate these Muslims so much, well, they don't hate them when they're destroying white society, do they? And I know that Albanian Muslims may be white, technically. But the spirit of the thing is what's important here. How does Lachism or the Jewish hatred of whites manifest itself in the U.S.? Well, we've talked about this 100 times, through civil rights, so-called, which is really, in truth, Jewish tyranny. You're not going to have Rush Limbaugh telling you this because it's true. But unlike Rush Limbaugh and Mike Huckabee and pretty much everyone you see in TV or in Congress, I haven't been flown to Israel 8 times and been encouraged to identify with the captors of our nation. I see Israel for what it is, our enemy. I see Jews for what they are, our enemy. I see what they do to the language, and because I'm interested in the English language and its potential and its myriad uses, I wish to protect English as I wish to protect the white race from Jewish depredations. So, this is the background. It's always to the... hate is really the best example. The term hate is the best example. So, just as we've seen, to make a concrete example in Yankee Jim's life, his entire life is reduced to one motive. He was a hater. He was a bigot. He was a racist. He was an extremist. He was a hater. He hated people. There's one thing you could say about Yankee Jim. He was a hater. Well, except we know Yankee Jim, and we know that's not true. But for rhetorical reasons and for ideological reasons, it works best for the totalitarians to turn everything they don't like, to funnel it into one word. And the general mass of people, the morons, the morantia, as I like to call it, as opposed to the intelligentsia, that's a word of Russian origin, actually. If there can be an intelligentsia, there certainly must be a morantia. So the morantia is encouraged to think that it is thinking when it calls someone a racist, a sexist, a homophobe. Oh, I've really achieved an feat of intellection there. I've called someone a racist or a homophobe, yeah. I'm the bee's knees, man. I figured it out. I know what's going on. I know what's happening. I mean, it's utterly ridiculous, but that really is how most people think. The message that to us white nationalists we see repeated 10,000 times, to them, the borderline for stimulus response is so high that it takes a million repetitions until they finally get it. That's why what's glaringly obvious to us is not glaringly obvious to other people. It may sail right over their head. They can't even tell that they're being propagandized around the clock. That's why we have to do our job in awakening those we can by pointing out the patterns. And that's largely what this radio show is about. It's about pointing out patterns. You can identify threats to yourself and your community and your family. When we tell you the direction from which the threats come, which is inevitably from the Jewish tyrants who control America and most of the white West. And indeed, as we say, every single show would throw us in jail. This show, what I'm saying right now, would be illegal to say in England. They would bust into my house and they would steal my computer and they would throw me in jail. And the exact same thing in Germany. I would get thrown in jail for what I'm telling you right now. Think about that. I would be thrown in jail for what I'm telling you right now. It's that dangerous to the powers that be to discuss what they are doing openly and to discuss the racial and ethnic motives behind this campaign of terror against normal white people, of which I'm one and I know you listening are one. And for those of you who think I'm exaggerating, oh, he wouldn't really be thrown in jail in Germany or England or Austria or Spain or France. Well, my friend, that's why I created the little forum at vnnforum.com called Speech Martyrs. And again, when we get to discussing this, we'll go through it. I wanted to put in one place the names of all these men who have spoken their minds freely, who have expressed themselves freely in writing, and been imprisoned for it. And I think, and I'll give credit to even to my enemy, Joe Farah did this with women teacher predators, that is, women teachers in public schools who have had sex with minors, or in some way sexually molested minor males. And I hadn't realized there were so many until I saw a long list that he compiled. Well, it's the same way with victims of Jewish anti-speech campaigns. Jews hate free speech, and they are part of rounding up. They have put in place the laws that ban the kind of discussion we're having here today. And when you see all these names collected, and you see, you know, across the European continent and in Canada too, you realize that what's going on is truly a global campaign against whites. And that whites everywhere, from the Antipodes, that's a fancy word for Australia, from Australia to Canada to France to England to Germany, whites are thrown in jail for speaking freely about problems in their society. Those of you who are old-time listeners will know what I'm talking about. Again, let's get back to the article. Again, we're dealing with a Jew, David Galanter. Background on this Jew is he teaches at Yale. He was sent a package by the Unabomber. It blew off a couple of his fingers, I believe, but he's still alive and pumping out Jew bilge. However, he's not wrong about what he's saying. He just doesn't give you, as Jews never do. They never give you the what, the who, and the why. They'll give you some of the what. They'll give you a few of the symptoms. They won't give you the root cause. They won't give you the disease, or tell you, let alone tell you how to cure it. But that's what I'm here for. The root cause of this stuff is the Jew. The Jew creates bogus academic disciplines and bogus movements within academia. Critical legal studies, that's a bogus legal movement. To say that the law doesn't mean what it says it means, there's no plain meaning to the law. It's just, you know, a structure of power relations. And it has to be changed because the law is written to favor the white male, so we have to change it to favor the Marxist and all the minorities, the women, the feminists, whoever. They create bogus movements, whether it's getting rid of real anthropology and replacing it with the lie that race doesn't matter, as Boas has done, whether it's creating anti-techniques, that is, bogus ways of instruction that deliberately mess up the mental mechanism of the white student victim. They call them students, but they ought to be called victims of mental abuse. Anyway, I'll read a little more from what Jew Galanter says. He talks about he. The idea that he can refer only to a male is a deliberate lie that was foisted on the population in order to get them to change it from he, so that today you see pretty much there across the board, even in respectable publications, even if you're talking about a single person. He had always historically represented both men and women. He says, and it gets worse. At the bottom of this junk pile is a maneuver that seems to be growing in popularity, at least among college students, writing she instead of a neutral he, or interchanging he and she at random. Well, I'll give you something else. When you have a baby, at least here in Missouri, you start getting, you get these booklets that are produced by the state, sent out free to all parents, I guess in the theory that, people who are actually dumb enough to need the information are going to read it, but it's just full of a bunch of stupid facts, basically. But the only pronoun used in any of these booklets, and they originally come from Texas, and they were apparently created by Laura Bush through some program. I guess she set up something to, you know, basically to teach stupid Hispanic mothers. And the baby is always, and these come out about once a month, always referred to as a she, never as a he. So that's a good example of what Galanter is talking about. He says, this grotesque outcome follows naturally from the primordial lie. If you make students believe that he can only refer to a male, then writers who use he in the sentences referring to men and women are actually discussing males only and excluding females, and might just as well use she and exclude males, leaving the reader to sort things out for himself. The she sentences that result tend to slam on a reader's brakes and send him smashing, spinning into the roadside underbrush, cursing under his breath. He says, I still remember the first time I encountered such a sentence in an early 1980s book by a noted historian about a Jesuit in Asia. Yeah, you know, it's just in the way they claim, oh, blacks just want equal rights. Well, they had superior, it went from whites being legally dominant to blacks being legally dominant. There never was any equality. There never is or can be any equality. And so it was with males. We'll discuss this a little later in an essay a black wrote about Africa, involving democracy and limitations of the franchise and why that's a good idea. Well, it used to be that a man, the polling, the democratic polling was basically polling the heads of the clans, that is the heads of the households. And that's how it is that he stands for he, she, it, whatever, the whole family. That's how it was in the language also. So, yeah, I'm getting confirmation that this is common in a lot of books, texts, as they reduce them today in modern parlance. And it's just obscene. There's nothing wrong with using he, and there is unclear. There should stand for multiple people. It's a plural, not for single people. Let's see, the Jew says, but the real problem goes deeper. Why should I worry about feminist ideology while I write? Why should I worry about anyone's ideology? Writing is a tricky business that requires one's whole concentration, as any professional will tell you, as no doubt you know anyway. Who can afford to allow a virtual feminist to elbow her way in like a noisy drunk into that inner mental circle where all your faculties, such as they are laboring to produce decent prose? Yeah, okay, but it's really not feminist. The deeper root of the problem is you had Jews come in and take over the academy, and feminism was just one of the false schools that they set up. They prospered with their laws. And I'm not the first, I'm not even the millionth and first person to say that feminists are humorless. They're typically, and I had, you know, various semi-girlfriends who were feminists, and I knew a lot of them, and, there are people who can't refute anything, can't argue, but they get angry and punch you and start crying when you make a couple of counterpoints. They're absolutely very, very frangible. That is like glass. They break very easily because they don't have anything to stand on. It's a bunch of emotion, and the typical feminist meeting is a bunch of not very intelligent women sitting around at a brown bag lunch bitching about this or that, and whenever women start talking about something, it inevitably becomes personal bickering, because that's what they do. They're not fit to run or rule things. You know, a woman can do anything a man can do. Yeah, after the man has done it 10,000 times and created safety belts and harnesses and written a guidebook, yeah, then the woman can kind of fake doing it. But the pioneers, the people who make the advances, are males. Almost always. It's a very rare and strange occurrence when it's a woman who makes a genuine advance in something. That doesn't mean there aren't a lot of women who are talented and whose brains can produce things that are useful to society, but 999 times out of 1,000, they are not breaking new ground. They are following in a male-created tradition. They are working within a male-created form. And that's the way it should be. That's the way nature made it. It's not something we can do anything about particularly, other than we can limit, we can destroy the male genius by boring it or drugging it to death in public schools, or denying it the teaching it might need to achieve the highest pinnacle of accomplishment, you know, by artificially promoting minorities and women ahead of it. And that's more or less what we're doing today. I mean, a good response in a blog. A good response in a blog on Kirksville today. You know, we have some retarded niggeress writing in about how angry about our talking about Tukey, who's this nigger who shot 7 people in Kirkwood, a suburb of St. Louis, and his brother basically said, that's cool, he was going to war. We wrote about that critically and pointed out that Tukey went to Truman State and wondered if he was, you know, promoted by affirmative action. And some illiterate negress writes in, Yanni's getting an education, and then, you know, she writes in a literate getterwease about how we whites need to be educated, you know, ungrammatically with bad spelling, and then we'd be getting ahead. This is the kind of thing that passes as education nowadays. I mean, the fact is, the people who are going to achieve stuff, the fact is that the academy has basically been taken over by people who are anti-intellectual. They're political ideologues, and in every area they possibly can, they're going to fill with their ideological crud and make swallowing that crud essentially a barrier to entry. You can't get your union card unless you swallow and excrete the bills that they put out. And that has driven the real scholars out of the field. It's driven the real journalists out of the field because they can't find work. That is what we were talking about the other night on the Friday night show with Dietrich. That's the opportunity cost of living in a Jew-controlled tyranny. It's not just that you're discriminated against. It's not just that you're treated as a hater for doing something that's normal, loving, and rational, and proactive. It's that a lot of the good things in life are simply destroyed. They can't come into existence because the money and time that would have been needed to create them was spent on something else. It was spent prospering columns of rhesus monkeys in our midst, violent rhesus monkeys. White genius went into computers in the late 20th century. It certainly wasn't in literature. It certainly wasn't in history. It went into computers because computers were an entirely new field the left hadn't co-opted. And that's always how it is. Genius finds another outlet. But that's not a reason not to fight to... I don't know if I'd even say take back at this point. I'm not one of those who believes whites can somehow get back into the system that's now controlled and run by very, very well entrenched and funded Jews. I don't think we can worm our way in and displace them in the Gramscian way, the long, slow march through the institutions, because the people who made that long, slow march are well aware of what they did, and they're not going to allow us to do it. We have to make our way by a somewhat different direction. And we'll talk about that after we take a musical break. One of those different ways of making our direction is through homeschooling, a radical rejection of the system. I discussed it on the last radio with Stina in relation to the new faggot prop laws. That's my coinage for fag positive agitprop that is by law included in the textbooks and the teaching in California, in consequence causing very well known rich and connected Christian conservatives to tell their people to make an exodus from California public schools. All that discussed last time, we're not going back into that. Instead, we're going to talk a little more about homeschooling in general. Article that appeared in a Kansas paper, and a scheming woman's attempt to derail homeschooling in Nebraska. And you know what? Why don't we do that next? Right now I'm going to play just a couple of songs, and then we'll get into it. And these are, let's see, we started the show with, let me see what I played here, just to let you know, in case you like this music, you want to look it up. We always lead into our show with Mr. Brownstone, which is my favorite song by Guns N' Roses, and it contains the line, I used to do a little, but a little wouldn't do it, so a little got more and more. Just keep trying to get a little better, said a little better than before. I like that song, and I like that lyric, and that's what we need in white nationalism, more and more and more, and better and better and better, and that's what we're working on. Now, I did it again, damn. That was my second lip smack, a technical mistake. I really despise technical mistakes. That was a little worse. Before that, we played Punk Rock Girl by Dead Milkmen, and the part I was playing, which was not the song I thought it was, another technical mistake, was I'm Back by Eminem. I don't really like that song. I thought it was a different one, actually. So that's why I cut it off. Now, what should we play here? I think we'll play... We're going to play a song you probably haven't heard, and then we're going to play a song that I've played before. And maybe one more. So we'll just take a little quick two or three song break, but no more than that, and I'll be back and we'll be talking about homeschooling. So enjoy this. This is Two by Amy Speece. S-P-E-A-C-E.
All the stars in the sky on this clear mid-May night are beyond the dark clay of these walls. They remind me of you, and when our love was new, everything's better with two. I have rolled out my bed alongside the red of Zion's great towering views, but the beauty so bold is lost all alone. Everything's better with two. A couple more drinks till they close, then they'll turn out the lights and ask me to go. So I'll sleep off the haze of my singular ways, count the days till I'm back home with you. Some like a group interlude, but with three or four, it's hard to keep score. I keep it simple with two. A couple more shows till I'm through, then I'll pack this guitar and head back home to you. And I'll cherish the nights I sleep holding you tight. Everything's better with two. Cause everything's better with you.
Every holiday, I got job I hate. Trying to do some good each day, and I'm happy every day. Oh, and I'm happy every day.
Okay, that was first, as I said, Two by Amy Spies was the first song. That last song there was Happy Every Day I Live by Miss Marianne and the something or other Wranglers. I'm going to play one more song and then we're going to talk a little bit more. What should we play here? We'll play an Irish drinking song, Bugger Off.
Well, bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Beg a herd of bloody swine who refuse to leave the trough. You'll get no more this evening, so you bastards, bugger off. Will you let a bloody audience obey? Oh, the time just passed. Now don't you wanna be letting that door hit you in the ass? You've been a splendid audience, but enough is enough. We take it very kindly if you'd all just bugger off.
Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Bloody swine who refused to leave the trough. You'll get no more this evening, so you bastards, bugger off.
Here's to the barkeeps and the waitresses who've been serving you your beer. They fuck with your noxious breath and your stupid drunken leers. Be leaving all your money on the table when you go. Well, you'll have a throbbing head and nothing else to show, so bugger off.
You bastards, bugger off. Bugger off. You bastards, bugger off. Take a herd of bloody swine who refuse to leave the trough. You'll get no more this evening, so you bastards, bugger off.
Here's to all the lovely ladies who might be waiting for the band, and thinking one of them might make a charming one night stand. Oh, please don't be offended, girls, the song's not meant for you, and we're happy to oblige you when this nasty job is through.
Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Take a herd of bloody swine who refuse to leave the trough. You'll get no more this evening, so you bastards, bugger off.
So now you're promising the ladies a night of loving bliss, when truth be told, your friends are drunk to stand up straight and piss. So give it up, your bloody socks, you'll not be getting laid. And the sooner that you're out the door, the sooner we'll be paid.
Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Take a herd of bloody swine who refuse to leave the trough. He'll get no more this evening, so you bastards, bugger off.
We'll bugger off,
you bastards, bugger off. Bugger off, you bastards, bugger off. Take a herd of bloody swine who refuse to leave the trough. He'll get no more this evening, so you bastards, bugger off. He'll get no more this evening, so you bastards, bugger off.
Peace and love.
All right, that was Bugger Off. Don't know who did it. Before that, we heard Amy Spies and Two. After that, in the middle, we heard Marianne and the Rumptown Rangers or Wranglers or something like that. It was Happy Every Day I Live. It's probably not even the precise title, but you've heard it before. It's a pretty good song. She even knows her face is plain. Interesting line. And I have another 20 songs or so lined up. We might even hear a little from Malcolm X. But for right now, I'm going to yap. But what I'm going to yap about is homeschooling. And you know this is one of my favorite subjects. And I made a thread titled Revolution from the Ground Up. And I want to discuss the conservative Christians leaving the public schools as a revolutionary act. And I want to talk a little bit about the enemies of it. I don't think this will take overly long, but what we have is a World Herald profile, that's a Nebraska paper, of the Conrad family, and that's a family in Nebraska with five kids. They're all being homeschooled by the mother. And the article says they're part of a 6,000 family network across the state. Nebraska's sparsely populated. That's a lot of people for one state. And what we want to learn here is this is the way whites can do it. These people have de-Jewed their lives. They may not be driven by the same motive we have, but they are driven by anger at a lot of the same symptoms of Zog control that we are. A lot of Zog's policies they dislike for overlapping but slightly different reasons than our own. Is that redundant? Overlapping but slightly different? Could something be 100% overlapping? What would the term for that be? I'm not sure. Let's not digress at this point. I want to tell you something, just in case you don't know it, and I bet you don't, you listening to it. And if you think I'm wrong, you look it up. You know how you dissect a frog, you dissect a worm, you dissect a pig's heart? It's actually dissect. Dissect. Short I. Go look it up. Here's another little interesting thing. E-R-R. How do you pronounce that? Air? 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 No, it's er. Now, what's gone on here is that the main defense organization for homeschoolers, of which there are more than 2 million nationwide and growing, you know, 7-10% a year, they say, is the Homeschooling Legal Defense Association, run by a guy named Mike Smith. And he says the most anti-homeschooling bill of the year was in Nebraska, where the Conrads live and the other 6,000 families who are homeschooling their children. And so I went and dug up a little of the background on the woman who is behind this anti-homeschooling bill. Her name is State Senator Diana Schimek, S-C-H-I-M-E-K, District 27 in Lincoln. That's Lincoln, Nebraska, is on the far eastern side of Kansas. The rest of it's mostly plains and empty, apart from Lincoln and a couple other population centers. And what is her background? And you who have heard me talk before, maybe some of you are on the fence. We know that we're reaching new people. We know that some of you don't believe 100% of what we say. I always say behind every major social problem in the U.S. is a Jew. Well, how's the Jew behind homeschooling? Why would the Jew be against Well, he's against homeschooling because homeschoolers don't like what's taught in the schools. Well, they're public schools. If you don't like what's being taught in public schools, you don't like what the government is teaching. That, when combined with effective action to get away from the government's teaching, is effectively revolutionary. Well, who's this Diana Schimek? What's her deal? We see that she's married to a Herbert Henry Schimek, two children, Samuel Wolfgang and Saul William. Now, personally, I've never known any Gentile named Saul. They were all Jews, the ones I've known or read about. This woman has received awards from the ACLU, from the Nebraska Women's Commission, and from the Lincoln Interfaith. Anytime you see something interfaith, it means Christians who have been suborned and subverted by the Jews and agree to push the Jewish agenda in exchange for awards just like this. They truckle before the Jews. They push the Jewish line against their own Christian teachings. And then, oh, at the bottom we see an article or a sentence thrown in there by the writer without further comment. Although her husband is a lobbyist for the state teachers' union, Shemek said that did not influence her her decision to introduce the bill. Wow, that didn't influence. Her husband is a lobbyist for the state teachers' union. Who's the main opponent, organizational opponent of homeschooling? Why, it's the NEA. Why is that? Well, because you're taking away their customers. Even to call them customers is wrong. They're in school mandatory. They're slaves. You're stealing their slaves, essentially, and they want their slaves back. They want to smash homeschooling. How do you smash homeschooling? How do you smash the homeschooling revolution? Well, you enforce regulations, or you create new regulations that force people to have a teaching certificate before they instruct their own children. Teaching certificates are notoriously Mickey Mouse. You have to go through a lot of educational theory, and that is a bunch of Jew and other and non-Jew progressive bilge in the theory and the art of instruction. And as we saw a little bit last time from Charlotte Isserbait, who wrote the book The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, this pedagogy, a lot of it comes from a guy, a Jew named Bloom, and his view on what education is not to instruct people and to draw out of them the kind of the flowering of their talents and abilities, but it's to challenge the beliefs they come to school with. That is, it's to strip them of the beliefs instilled by their parents and the teachings instilled by their parents. And that means taking them from normal settled Aryan patterns and making them into essentially Jewish radical liberals, or going as far as they can along those lines, or persuading them that there's no fighting City Hall. The leftist technique for doing this is, as Isserbait describes, its thesis, antithesis, and then synthesis. And what this is this is a Hegelian notion ultimately. So that gives the Charlotte Isserbaits an out. They don't have to blame Jews. They can blame the German who came up with this originally, instead of the Marxists who turned it into effective politics. And the idea is to move students, not just students, but to move white populations from one position to a position more favorable to the Jewish tyranny running the country, or the New World Order people running the country and trying to create a New World Order. What they do is, wherever you are, wherever the normal white is, whatever the normal white attitude is, that's the thesis. That's the settled pattern. That's the Aryan way of looking at things, the Aryan way of acting. And how do they get you to move? Well, they whip up a crisis. How do they do that? Well, who controls the media? Who controls the media? It's not people like you and me. It's Jews at the top owning the mass trash media companies. All of them. And the upper ranks of those are staffed with Jews, the leading publication, the New York Times, that all the rest of the little papers look to for wire feeds and for syndicated stories, and in a more general sense, for a direction, a way to frame whatever original reporting they do, which is very little. And so they all followed the lead of the massive, giant, leading papers like the New York Times and the Washington Post, and they buy from the Jew-owned Associated Press, and that's what fills out 75% of their stories, and the other 25% are written in line with the same agenda. And the proof of that is that they always use the same terms, so that no matter where Yankee Jim's tragic death is written up, you know that he will be called a hater and an extremist. He will never be called a civil rights fighter and a worker for the liberation of white people, or a defender of whites. He'll never be called that, no matter which paper you read. That's how you show the mass media, trash media uniformity, globe-wide, not just nationwide, globe-wide. And so what they do is they use their power over the media, they use their power of government, from controlling the government, to create bogus crises that require immediate action. Great changes in the way we live. Now, do they get what they want? No, they don't get what they want. But what they do is they keep up this crisis talk. They keep browbeating people with the same lies over and over and over, and they do it long enough and hard enough that eventually, to get a little relief, the Aryan side compromises itself. Not in every way, but that's what a compromise is. It gives in on some of its formerly essential principles, and thereby it moves. It moves from its thesis to the synthesis. So it hasn't gone all the way to the Jewish radical position, but it's gone a space in that direction. It's gone a ways in that direction. And it doesn't gain anything but temporary relief, and it really doesn't even gain that, because immediately the Jews pick up a drumbeat for a new campaign. Once they've normalized one thing, why, they want to normalize the next thing, and the crisis talk begins again. It's always a way, and there can be multiple campaigns going on at once, and they can even seem to be at odds maybe on something, or they can seem to be totally unrelated. How could global warming be related to sex education or death education? Well, they're all trying to push you in a Jew-radicalized direction that's good for Jews. They're trying to make you loose and promiscuous. They're trying to destroy the old way of teaching reading. They're trying to persuade you to pay higher taxes because they claim the world's coming to an end because there's more carbon dioxide out there. Global warming. Whatever it is, they are trying to move you from a sane, rational, logical, Aryan, settled tradition or pattern to their radical commie Jew position. And they do it by that triangulation, by that antithesis, synthesis, and then it starts all over again. So you're always being pushed in some direction. It's always the same direction, and eventually, you know, you're down the road, and pretty soon you're legalizing man-boy love, bestiality, who knows? I mean, the sexual revolution is probably the best way to look at it. You have the Jews pushing it. First, they push for easier divorce laws, right? Homosexuals marrying. Why, that's unthinkable. Yes, it is unthinkable in 1967. But what's not unthinkable after years and years and campaigns is eased up divorce laws. Okay, so it's the Aryan has moved from the thesis of a non-no-fault divorce, of hard divorce, let's say, of no divorce even, to easy divorce. Okay, he has moved, that's the synthesis. After a campaign of radicalization, you know, oh, these poor women trapped in these loveless marriages, we need to make it easier on them. Now the Aryan has moved from no divorces, which keeps families intact, keeps the nation stable no matter how much misery there is in the part of certain people. On the whole, there's less misery than there would be if there were easy divorce. So he's moved from the sane position to the Jewish position. But the Jew doesn't stop there. The Jew pushes again. Oh, you have to legalize, you know, say, the pill. Okay, well, we go from no pill to we go to having the pill. We go to legalizing abortion. He did that by slightly different means. He simply flipped the law. He went against the law, as he did with Brown versus Board of Education. But you know, push it forward another 30 years, and the Jews campaign for homosexuals being normal, and eventually a couple of states give in, and they move from the sane Aryan position of men can't marry men to men can marry men. Is that an end? No. They keep on going. What's next? Pedophilia. Normalizing that. This is how the Jew radicalizes white society. And the manufacturing of crises is a technique for communist revolution, and that's a dramatic way to put it. Short of that, it's a recipe for getting people to turn over money and power to government. Regardless, it's a technique that works independent of race. I mean, tax, spend is the way the Democrats put it in the 30s. Elect being the conclusion. But how do they raise the taxes? I mean, it's another way of saying the same thing. They manufacture crisis. Oh, we have an education crisis. We need to spend more. Teachers are underpaid. They tell you that 10,000 times. Are they underpaid? What do they do? What do they do for that money? You know, and ignore the facts. You never see the facts brought out about, you know, teaching. There's no relation between class size and effective teaching. There's no relation between money spent and effective teaching. The facts don't matter, though. What you get are repetition of the same bogus slogans, the same limiting of the language, turning it into a few slogans, and a good camp and a bad camp. And anyone who's against the Jewish radical camp, well, they're the ones who created the crisis, or they're the ones who are not responding to the crisis. They are abused in fresh new terms. As you know, you're as bad as a Holocaust denier if you deny global warming. They use the same technique over and over. Once you understand this, you don't even need to know the facts of a certain situation. You just need to know the pattern to recognize what's going on. Mencken put it in the most brilliant and beautiful English possible. You know, because an analyst can explain, as I have explained, what's happening, as Charlotte Isserbait explains in The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America, what's happening. Mencken put it in beautiful, memorable English. He says, "The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety." You know, Hillary Clinton's going to save you from the healthcare crisis. "By menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary." Now what you have is, you get the left-wingers scared about global warming, and you get the right-wingers scared about terrorists. And both of them, they believe in the crises manufactured by their own side, and they don't believe in the crisis manufactured by the other side, and it's purely partisan. The fact is, both sides are on the same side, and both crises are imaginary. And Mencken put it perfectly. And that's what practical politics is in a democracy, where you have to appeal to the lowest common denominator, because it's allowed to vote. And mass voting has never been a feature of a stable or a sane society. Mass voting democracy, that is, leads to tyranny. And it already has. It leads to domination by the rich, and ultimately the rich can do whatever they want. And the rest have the charade that they're voting and that it makes any difference who they vote for. We'll discuss that a little more when we get into some of the African stuff. Let's see. I wanted to make another point or two about the revolution from the ground up. And one of the, I don't know if I mentioned this the first time, but the woman, the state senator from Nebraska, Diana Shemek, who proposes the bill that would essentially regulate homeschooling out of existence. And let me pause to digress here. I had incorrectly said in the last Radio Astina that by 1983, homeschooling was basically legal in all states. That's not the case. 1983 was about when the HLDSA, Homeschool Legal Defense Association, began. That's when it was created, in 1983. And at that point, the founder of that, the guy who's ahead of it now, Michael Smith, said that homeschooling was illegal in 45 states in 1983. So that's when the battle began to get it all legalized, or that's when the main battle began to get it all legalized. I guess in the five it was legal, it either had never been illegal, or the hippies and some of the Christians had got it legalized by that point. But shortly thereafter, I believe it did become legal in all 50 states as it is now, thanks to the legal efforts of these conservative Christians. So we owe them some thanks for that. Now that homeschooling is roughly 2% of all school children, there are about 46 to 48 million kids in public schools or slave schools, and there are 2 million who are being homeschooled. So it's a small but not insignificant percentage of the total, 2 million out of 50 million, that is being homeschooled. And as I said, it's growing 7 to 10% a year, depending on whose numbers you believe. So as it grows, it becomes more threatening to the NEA because it threatens their power source, their money. They get paid per, ass and seat. You take asses out of seats, they don't get paid. The homeschoolers make the point, look, we're saving these people $7,000 a year because, I don't know what the average funding per pupil is nationwide, but I believe it's not less than $6,000, and in many places it's over $10,000. Including in Washington, D.C. Of course, it's not reflected in the scores there because it doesn't matter how much money you spend teaching a pig, it still can't learn English. It doesn't have the capacity for it. Those who assume that all men are equal are wrong. They aren't equal. Blacks don't have the IQ to be educable, most of them, beyond a very limited degree. That fact is not allowed to be discussed publicly. We saw James Watson, for Christ's sakes, driven out of his job because he mentioned a simple biological fact. Not an opinion, a fact. So, what we have now is the homeschooling revolution has spread and grown, and we see people, state after state, realizing, my God, I can do 10 times better in a tenth the time for a tenth the cost if I teach my kids at home. And the NEA and the public school and the leftist socialist controllers have come up with any number of reasons why homeschoolers outperform public schoolers, and any number of reasons that homeschooling is bad. Usually the most typical one is kids aren't going to be socialized right. Well, anyone who's been to a public school knows what a joke that is. They'll be socialized better if they're around adults than if they're around their peers. That's a simple fact. They've done studies that found geniuses did far better when they were taught by parents, and they grew up in the society of elders who were more learned than they were and were able to teach them and bring them along more rapidly than they would among their peers in a public school. So, simple facts, but they're denied by the media and the government, which are one and the same thing, and the public schools, which are one and the same thing. Now, so this woman who's proposed this bill that would essentially require homeschool teachers to be formally certified in the way that public school teachers are, thereby driving homeschooling. Effectively, it would make public homeschooling illegal in Nebraska if it were passed. But the governor of the state has said he will not sign it, even if it gets through. So that's good. But this woman, Diane Shemek, has won an award from the Chicano Awareness Center. And that was all the digging I did. And then someone else posted, let's see here, Dan Allen posted another bill that she proposed. It says, Senator Shemek proposed a controversial bill in 2006 to allow for in-state tuition rates for illegal immigrants in the state of Nebraska. So, like we say, I don't know if this woman's a Jew, but I'm guessing she's either is a Jew or is married to a Jew, or they're both Jews. So she's proposing that your kids, that the illegal aliens get the same rates as Nebraska citizens get. And that's how these Jews think. You know, on every position that they have, they're anti-white. And they're giving each other these different awards. She's got 5 or 10 different awards from the same usual collection of liberal groups. Well, this is not good for whites. She's willing to give Mexicans privileges over white kids. Mexican non-citizens privileges that make them equal to white citizens, and she's trying to prevent white citizens from educating their own kids. And that's a big leftist thing. They always want to demand that kids be taken away. It goes back to Plato. Demand that kids be taken away from their families and indoctrinated, inculcated with state lies. That's how the state always looks at it. And in Germany, it's literally illegal. The Nazis Hitler actually criminalized homeschooling for the same reason. They don't want people teaching their kids any dogma that is opposed to what they believe. And for that reason, when you see the homeschooling laws in Germany referred to today, they'll always say, oh, the law was put in 38. What they won't do is call it a Nazi law. You see, because they like that law. Totalitarians want to control what people know and think and what they're teaching their kids. Because they intend to use those kids. They see those kids as fodder, and they see those kids as human resources. No individual sees himself as a human resource. What, to be used by other people? People see themselves as ends in their own right. They have their own ideas and motives. And that was the purpose of traditional education, to draw your own abilities out of you by channeling them through the understanding of science, through the knowledge of languages, through the development of the techniques that make for art, apart from the genius or the inspiration you might have. That was traditional education, and the way that it was got across was through private tutors. And you learn much more easily and better when it's one-on-one than you do in a class with a bell ringing all the time, and you can only study, and this is the way they set it up. No child left behind. Everybody has to study the exact same things, and they have to be tested on it. Well, Homeschooling is precisely the opposite. There's no need for testing at all. You can learn what you need to learn, what you want to learn, what you can learn in areas that you have aptitudes for. And you can fit the education to the talents and aptitudes of the individual, which is the exact opposite of mass so-called education. And so you see, the Jews are always on the side of forcing Aryan kids to conform to the state ideology, demanding they be stuck in concentration camps for 10 hours a day in their formative years. And they want to go beyond, you know, the traditional 7 to 18 or 16 schooling. They want to go earlier than that, and they want to go later than that. And we've seen the examples of that from all around the world. They want to make more and more preschool mandatory and pump more and more billions of dollars into this stuff, have more federal control. Anyway, that's just another example, and we track homeschooling in Vienna. Next, we'll talk about Vienna and it, Vienna Forum and its development. But let's take another little music break and play a couple more songs. And before I do that, I just want to say, if you go to VNNForum.com, then you go to Learning, which is one of the forums at VNNForum.com. And within Learning, we have a thread on homeschooling. And it's sticky. That means it's stuck at the top, and it's called News, the ongoing battle between state and homeschoolers. And that's, we have 3 or 4 or 5 different sticky subjects where you can learn homeschooling resources, the simple facts about homeschooling versus slave schooling, and the true background of public schooling, its history and aims, and the best writers I mentioned, Isser Bade and John Taylor Gatto and Samuel Blumenfeld, or a couple others who explain the purpose and nature of public schooling. I went into that a bunch last time. I won't do it anymore this time. All right, when we come back, I'm going to talk about VNN Forum and how I've been altering it in the last few weeks and what our overall mission is here and how you can and should use it as we develop our revolution. But let's see what we want to hear now. I think what do we want to hear? I'm going to play another one by Amy Spies. She's a new one that someone one of my friends introduced, and I want to kind of hear. I think she's pretty good. And believe me, there's a lot of garbage out there. These are selected songs. I'm not just playing new stuff at random. I don't like people who do that. I'm not one of these people who likes music because it's esoteric. I like it because it's good, or because I like it, and no other reason. But I think this woman's a pretty good singer. Amy Spies, and this is Make Me Lonely Again.
I sit by my window and stare at the moon. I've held all your letters till my fingers were blue. I recall every moment like I'm pressing rewind. I got what I asked for, now I'm losing my mind. Even when I was younger, the whole world was dancing, falling in love. I stayed home in my slippers, watching Harold and Maude. I feel like I'm dying, and I'm always crying. If this is what love is, make me lonely again. didn't understand why. When girlfriends had crushes, how they'd giggle and sigh. Love made them seem stupid, giddy and lost. And I bragged love would never tie my stomach in knots. I feel like I'm dying, and I'm always crying. If this is what love is, make me lonely again. Yes, I feel like I'm dying, 'cause I'm always crying. This is what love is. Make me lonely again. Pride took a dive. I loved you the first instant you looked into my eyes. Now my whole world is spinning. I'm not sleeping so well. If love's really the answer, why does it put us through hell? Is what love is. Make me lonely again. 'Cause I feel like I'm dying, and I'm always crying. If this is what love is, make me lonely again. If this is what love is, make me again.
All right, and that was Make Me Lonely Again by Amy Spies, from whom we earlier heard Two, another track. Now we're going to hear Temptation by Cinderella Stump, a song I really like.
Rosin on the bow, and here we go.
Tell me, will you, darling, why you look so bad tonight? There's bags around your eyeballs, which is red instead of white.
Well, if for this way you came when I was alone, shucks, I should have known that you was temptation. You smile the leering me on, my heart is plumb gone, 'cause you was temptation. It'd be thrilling if in your will. Bored to be kissed, I couldn't resist, 'cause you was temptation and I was
a mud hole tips a mosquito, darling.
That's how you tempted me.
And as corn liquor tips a drunkard, as organ tips a bee, as a willow tree tips a caterpillar, darling.
That's how you tempted me. hard to be kissed. I couldn't resist, cause you was temptation, and I was yours. Here's my heart, take it away. Yes, take it away and say that we will never, never, never part. I'm just a slave, just a bad burn slave. I'm a-gonna wed you, cause you're temptation, and I'm a red hot flame.
Hot cinder.
That song is just too cool, in my opinion. I also want to mention that Amy Spies, in her song Make Me Lonely Again, mentioned Harold and Maude, a movie that we reviewed here at VNN, and I found a link to it, and I posted that in our chat thread. Wrong, just our thread on VNNforum.com. This just in, Stickied Radio Astina 4-2-26-2008. Let's play one more and then get right back at it. And I'll just give you a good rundown of VNN Forum. As I said, one more song. What should we? What should we play? Here's a song that could have been a top 10 if it had ever been released, but it couldn't be because it was semantically incorrect in a tiny portion of the last verse.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Get out of my way. Don't need to buy none of your change today. And I don't need no bracelet clamped in front of my back. Just need my ticket till then. Won't you cut me some slack? You're one in a million. Yeah, that's what you are. You're one in a million, babe. You're a shooting star. Maybe someday we'll see you before you make us cry. You know we tried to reach you, but you were much too high. Much too high. Much too high. Me. They come to our country and think they'll do as they please. Let's start some mayor rant or spread some fucking disease. They talk so many goddamn ways, it's all Greek to me. Well, some say I'm lazy, and others say that's just me. Some say I'm crazy, I guess I'll always be. But it's been such a long time since I knew right from wrong. It's all the means to an end. I keep it moving along. I, you're one in a million. Oh, you're a shooting star. You're one in a million, babe. You know that you are. Maybe someday we'll see you before you make us cry. You know we tried to reach you, but
right. That was Guns N' Roses, One in a Million. Before that, we heard Temptation by Cinderella Stump. Two by Amy Spies and Make Me Lonely Again by Amy Spies, too. Now let's talk about VNN Forum. Let's go over what's been going on here lately. I see there's a bunch of debate over Ron Paul. I'm tempted to dig into that, but I'll respond later. I already did respond at length regarding Bill White and White Will and what they do and their interactions involving me and us. But what we've done, what I've done at VNN is slightly revise it, and I got rid of some forums that were not really being used. I folded the UK Nutspot Civil into their respective general civil and Nutspot categories and renamed it England, and have cut out a lot of the flaming in there, although I'm informed that flaming is the English way of life. What I'm trying to do here is create single threads in many of these categories that are essentially edited and managed so that newcomers, that is people you direct, you give them our URL, they go there, they read through it, they immediately get up to date by reading through one thread. Zimbabwe would be the best example of this. You go there and in the first few posts you read William Pierce's wonderful ADVs, wonderful ADVs detailing the horrific crimes and absolutely pathetic history of Rhodesia as it turned into Zimbabwe and what happened from there. It's devolution over 20 years from 1980 to 2000, and then the seizure of the white farms in 2000 and the decline from bad to basically starvation level misery today. And we update that. I update that personally by hand, picking the best stories and sticking them in there in the Zimbabwe and the South Africa thread and in the Australia forum, so that you can understand the world, the white world, pretty much at a glance and see what's going on, because our thesis is that we face a global problem with the same root global cause. That is the Jews. The Jews in every one of these countries, and we went into this at length last time about Australia, last Radio Astina, talking about how Jews in Australia, they are undermining it in precisely the same way they undermined America, and for precisely the same reasons. Jews want to live in diverse societies, and they will do anything to get the right mix of people thinking the right thoughts. So they open the borders. They do whatever they can to encourage non-whites to flood into white areas. You'll notice they don't do that in other countries. Nobody's encouraging immigration of whites into Asia or whites into Africa. But every single white nation is encouraged to claim that it's a nation of immigrants and to let in the third world hordes for one of a thousand different reasons that Jews can come up with. Whites never seem to have any right to protect themselves. But whining about double standards won't get us anywhere. Explaining that the Jews are the root of this problem and going directly after the Jews and announcing that we are whites and we won't stand for their garbage, that's what will get us somewhere. And we need more and more intelligent, capable people to realize that and join up with us. That's why we do these radio shows. That's why we do VNN Forum. And the idea is, at one stop, you can get the information you need to know to understand your world. And so I've been working on the forum a lot lately, and we'll continue to do that and really managing it more. And we kick out anybody who signs up under an unapproved name. We're getting more responsible people. We're getting away from the 1488 wannabe Nazi crowd. We never really were into it that much, I don't think, compared to what some people said. We have a red-headed woodpecker as our symbol. I'll talk about that just for a second. I saw one of these in flight, and I thought, that's beautiful. And they happen to... This is one of their two centers in the U.S., where you'll find the most of them. And they're somewhat threatened, I guess, but they're a really beautiful little bird. And I kind of like the irony that they're kind of our party colors, and yet they're totally natural. And that's a sign that we believe in following some of nature's laws. Well, we have to follow nature's laws to some extent, but we respect nature more than the utopian fantasists and the evil liberals who try to do things that are unnatural and just cause misery. Okay, so Let's look at let's look as an example of how we've changed things at the Africa Forum. What I have is non-American, non-U.S. countries are listed under Europe. We have Europe as a general category. Then we have England, Ireland, Canada, Germany, France, Russia, Australia, and Africa. In Africa, we have specific threads for South Africa and Zimbabwe. These are kind of the two white countries, or formerly white. What's happened in both of them? In South Africa, or in Zimbabwe, there used to be 250,000 whites when it was turned over to the blacks in 1980. Today there are about a tenth of that, maybe 25,000. Inflation just went over 100,000% in January. And 80% of the people are unemployed, I believe. So they're basically starving to death. The only people who have anything are Mugabe's thugs. But I'm using this as an example of how we reform BNN Forum to make it better for outsiders so that they can understand our cause as quickly as possible. Now, what we have up top in the forum, we have an executive summary thread, and I've got the best of white nationalist writing. If you see good stuff, send it to me, and I'll stick the link in there, and people can get up to speed. It's the one choice essay I've directed them to Yggdrasil's stuff. But then this is supplementary. It's our the best of the best stuff that we have. So they get our case right up top, and if they want news, they want to learn about these individual countries, they come to our country forums and they go through it. And what do we have in Zimbabwe? We have, let's see what we have. We'll talk about the latest happenings there. Use this as an example. I'm very much, what we try to do at VNN and VNN Forum is the opposite of what the mainstream media does, which is take things out of context and distort them so that you never gain any true understanding of the thing in question. And so that life is an endless procession of blips and blops that we respond to like, you know, animals. There's no greater meaning anywhere. What we have to do at VNN is put things in the context and give you perspective so that you can understand them. And that works for everything. And Hitler specifically describes in Mein Kampf in Chapter 2 how you read and the way that you collect and sift information, and you read for a purpose. And you take the bits of information, the new stuff that you get, and you fit it in with the old. And you have to come to some way of parsing that together to give yourself a picture of the world so that everything that you read, it either deepens or clarifies what you already know. And in the rare case, it controverts it. Or you learn that what you knew or what you thought you knew was actually a bit of Jewish brainwashing that you now get rid of. And so, what we have on this Mugabe thread is not just news, but we have the eternal news, or what we call in the news business, the evergreen material that's always relevant. And this would be a Pierce ADV broadcast, such as the one he made a couple years before he died in April 29th, 2000. And he discusses the role of the Jew Hoogstraten in undermining white Rhodesia and getting it turned over to Mugabe. Jew Hoogstraten was one of the big Jew financiers of the Kami Mugabe Revolution. That's all there. You know, we've got three pages of threads, and the other day I went through and added a bunch more material, and that's what I do. I update so that you go to one thread and you can learn about what's happening in this country. It's, you read this thread, it's far more fulfilling than the crap you get from morons like Dan Rather or Katie Couric, to take an even a moronessa. I mean, you come here and you get a real education. And so what we didn't have before on VNN was managed and edited and controlled threads like this. And I will put in there only material that will clarify what you already know, or deepen it, or extend your knowledge. And, you know, we have some pictures of Zimbabweans. And we have third tongue click I shouldn't have done. Just keeping track. Yeah, we see a bunch of the MDC, that's the opposition party, marching under a banner that says, "Where's our money?" And then we see
you know, a picture is worth a thousand words. You know, we see a crossing sign with an elephant on it. I mean, that's what it's like in Africa. I mean, Africa's just like the Queen said, sex is too good for the commoners. Africa is too good for niggers. In a lot of ways, Africa's the best continent on the planet. And to think that it's abandoned to niggers is absolutely pitiful. And really, it should be taken over, if for no other reason than the preservation of attractive game species by non-niggers. Because there really is, unlike global warming, there really is a bushmeat crisis. The niggers will slaughter anything that moves because they have to eat. And they like to eat bushmeat. And that is literally anything that moves that they can get a machete onto, or a panga, one of their knives, like an African machete onto. We see a shot of empty shelves. That's the story in Zimbabwe. And one of the main bloggers from Zimbabwe is a liberal woman called Kathy Buckle. She writes a letter about every week, just a short little letter to her friends describing what's going on. And she's perfectly delusional, because she, in line with the so-called Western press that we here at VNN know is actually the Jew-controlled press, portrays Zimbabwe's problems as a result of bad politicians. Well, Robert Mugabe is Western trained. He has 7 degrees. He was raised up in Jesuit high schools. He's an intelligent guy. He went to London School of Economics. He has 7 degrees. He was raised as a Christian, a Catholic, and yet he resorts to policies that literally have his countrymen starving or on the verge of starvation. Because when you take farms away from competent white farmers and you give them to incompetent, untrained blacks, what do you think's going to happen? Well, the nigger couldn't figure it out. And now his people are starving. But what we see most recently, and we've got a couple shots here of one black hands another black a $50 bill, and the other one hands him a stack that's literally about 5 inches thick of 10,000 Rhodesian dollar notes. Is that what it is? Yeah, they do have the dollar in Rhodesia. So it's a 5-inch stick. This is the hyperinflation we've heard about in Weimar Germany. It's now going on in Zimbabwe. So you've got a 5-inch stack of $10,000 Zimbabwean notes for one U.S. $50 bill. Think about that. How could you calculate anything with that kind of craziness going on? It's pretty hard to believe, isn't it? Now, let's see here. Yeah, blacks out marching in the street. A nice action shot of a nigger using what in South Africa is called a jambok, or a shambok, S-J-A-M-B-O-K, I believe. And he appears to be a cop or one of Mugabe's thugs who's about to lay a whipping on some other nigger. Who appears to be looking at the third nigger who might be trying to do the same thing. So, Zimbabwe, and again, I said we give you context. The context here is that the white population has declined by 90% from 250,000 when Smith and the whites turned it over to Mugabe in 1980 to 25,000 or less today. And the population as a whole, what is it now? I think that it's gone from 12 million to 8 million. About 4 million, mostly black Zimbabweans, have fled the country because obviously they're starving to death. Now, south of Zimbabwe is the Limpopo River, forms the border with South Africa, and a lot of those Zimbabweans have tried to flee into South Africa, where the niggers, even though there are constant brownouts, are still able to maintain enough, thanks to their several million whites who are, again, are still in the country, to you know, keep the wolf away from the door, at least in terms of food. So the point here is to give you the global context, and that means showing you that each step along the path to white genocide, and how those steps are paved, and who's creating this road, who's ordering this road, who's engineering it in the first place, and to show you that this is not a political problem. A nigger is a known entity. It doesn't have a high enough IQ to sustain a civilization. Therefore, if you treat it as your equal, it's a way of destroying yourself. It's a socially acceptable form of racial suicide to twist something that the late Kurt Vonnegut said about smoking. You know, it's a socially acceptable form of suicide. Well, so is allowing Negroes equal rights and thinking you're great. The thing is, the smokers don't delude themselves that they're damaging their health, whereas liberals like Kathy Buckle do delude themselves. They maintain, even as they're driven into the grave, even as they go to the supermarket and can't find any food to buy, that this has nothing to do with race, when in fact it has everything to do with race. The Zimbabwean IQ, as we've said before, is estimated about 67 to 71, which is retarded. How can retarded people run a country? They can't. And ain't nothing going to change that fact. You may not be interested in facts, white liberal, but the facts are interested in you. So we maintain racial realism, racial sanity. That's what our site is about, is showing you the global picture of what's going on. Now, and as someone pointed out, and maybe it was Dietrich, you know, Zimbabwe used to be the breadbasket of Africa, and now its people are starving. And what does that tell you? And we have Mar Winsing, who's our man on the ground in South Africa, posted an essay by a black conservative named Mukui Waruru. I don't know how to pronounce it. M-U-K-U-I, Mukui Waruru, a black Kenyan conservative, he says. This was posted in 2008, and there's actually some sense in here in relation to what I've been talking about, that he says in there, the Anglo-Saxon tradition is allowing the vote only to those who can use it responsibly. To the founders of America, that meant white males who owned property and were of a certain age, so that they had a stake in their government. They weren't voting to steal stuff, they were voting to protect stuff. If you don't protect property and you let the masses of people vote, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to vote to steal the property of the people who earned it, to get by themselves by legal, illegal means what they can't get by the sweat of their own brow or by their own brain work. Right? So, voting is highly overrated. Democracy is a complete sham. What we had originally in America was a representative republic, where people who met certain qualifications were allowed to have a small voice in deciding the future of the country. And they came together in essentially defensive alliances, and through the different levels, through the local, state, and then finally the federal level, whereby the states as independent entities came together in a compact to establish a common defense, not to you know, solve all these crises and do all these things that nobody can do. They allowed white males to determine the future of their country. But what happened over time is that demagogues realized that they could gain power and money for themselves by appealing to the masses of idiots. And so they argued increasingly for the cheapening of the franchise, its extension beyond white males who had property and who were literate to the lowliest nigger felon out there. And they didn't demand any requirements of him. They didn't make him prove that he could read. They didn't make him prove that he had any income. He was just the fact that he existed and was on two feet and able to fog a mirror was enough for him to be allowed to vote. Well, now we see in America the result of that. Everything is up for grabs. The press can hound you. If you're popular and you take a position they don't like, they can kill you. They can kill your reputation overnight. They can get you thrown in jail. Look at Martha Stewart. No one's rights are safe. Now, even back in the day, William F. Buckley had some intelligent words. And remember, okay, what you've got are the Europeans colonizing Africa for less than 100 years, but then rapidly decolonizing after World War II. And as they left, in their wake came black tyrants. Of course, they all promised they wouldn't make a one-party state, but that's how Africans run things. The big man, you know, the the big chief runs everything, and he rewards his friends and he punishes his enemies. We talked last week about, or on one of our FTL shows, about Jacob Zuma, who is kind of the guy waiting to take power after Mandela leaves. And Zuma, I think he became president. The first thing he does is try to disband a high-level anti-organized crime unit that has, found him probably guilty of about 16 counts of corruption. Well, the minute he has power, he tries to disband it. That's an African way of looking at things. All the Africans ever do is blame other people, whether they're Africans or in Africa, or whether they're in America, like Detroit, Kwame Kilpatrick, physically attacking TV reporter who asks him honest questions. Whether it's in D.C. or, Marion Barry claiming the bitch set me up. And talking about, they always talk about evil racist whites, even if there aren't any whites around, like Mugabe in Zimbabwe, where whites are 25,000 out of a population of 12 million. Well, what was a population of 12 million until it started starving, and is now a population of 8 million. Whether whites are 25,000 out of 8 million or 4 or 5 million out of 40 million, even if they're less than 10% of the population, as is true in both cases, they are going to get all of the blame. Just as in America, whites having owned slaves 400 years ago explains black failure today, so it is in Africa. Wherever blacks are, they're going to blame whites. And the reason they're allowed to get away with that is because they do it because they're dumb. But the reason they're allowed to get away with it is because the Jews own the newspaper. They created that argument. They put that anger chip, that blame chip on the black shoulder. They encourage them to feel aggrieved against whites. They encourage them to attack whites. That was what the series Roots was all about, to inculcate guilt in whites. And if you think about it, the Holocaust was never mentioned or even heard of until about the mid-70s when they created a miniseries on it, about the same time as they created the miniseries Roots. Both these are to inculcate guilt in the white population. You owe us, say the Jews. You owe us, they say for the blacks. Who's the guilty? White earners like you and me. Ordinary, normal white people are responsible for all the failures of Jews and blacks. We're persecuting them. We're hurting them. They need reparations. We must apologize to them. That's the Australian version of the same thing that we discussed at great length last time on Radio Astina. You understand what I'm saying? I think you do. Let's read through this interesting, but here and there you'll find a black who knows what's going on because he might have a IQ that is a couple standard deviations above his countrymen, and that seems to be the case with this black conservative. I met one at Pomona, actually. His name was Jojo Kuma Kuma, and he was downgraded by our Marxist African history professor because he didn't share the guy's politics. He thought, well, the West has some great things. I want to learn what they have and, improve my, I think he was a Nigerian. I believe. I didn't know him well, but I knew him. I talked to him a few times, and he basically had respect for the West. And Africans, at least some of the ones, I haven't met many Africans, but they, at that point, didn't have a chip in his shoulder. He didn't hate whites. He was, as black as black gets, blue-black. They don't have that chip in their shoulder the way Americans do, probably because they're not exposed to so much mass media. At least they weren't back in that day. Now, today it's 20 years later, and I'm sure that, certainly they get more and more of that as TV and satellites and cell phones, et cetera, spread around. But not all blacks are inherently hostile to whites. A small but significant minority understands that things would be better if whites are running things. And we've seen this not just in the comments from Jojo Kumankuma, who I'm talking about, from Pomona many years ago, but from the riverboat guide in the Congo who said, we mentioned that the other week, things haven't just been neutral since the Belgians and the Portuguese left. They've gone backwards. Everything that's here was created by whites, and we ain't been able to do nothing about it. Because, the Congos have some of the lowest IQs in the world. And same thing in Zimbabwe and in South Africa. There's plenty of blacks who realize that, hey, we are not capable of running our own civilization. And this is the mature voice. This is the problem. The problem is that the Jews and the demagogues that they support are able to overbalance and outweigh the sane, responsible, mature white men who should have the political power in a country. And they do that by appeals to emotion and appeals to the throngs of idiots who are allowed to vote. So the white male sees, geez, there's nothing I can really do about this. I'm getting steamrolled. And they basically withdraw. And we are denied the benefit of the wisest and politically the most capable sector of the population, which is elderly white males. That's where all of our political terms come from, like aldermen. I mean, it's old men who make these decisions. The wise elders, right? Even in black society you have that. The wise elders are the ones who make the policy for the tribe. The aldermen gathering in the thing, as they called it in the Nordic areas. Well, this is the normal way of running things. I mean, raising kids is appropriate to women, and making political decisions, which is basically a protective function. Politics is protecting us from our enemies. That's a male thing, completely, 100%. And it ain't got nothing to do with women, and it sure as hell ain't got nothing to do with people who aren't even of our own clan or kind. Diversity or multiculturalism is a theoretical abstract. It's something that WASPs are wrong about, and that Jews know is wrong, but deliberately foister among us as a false doctrine because they know it will destroy us. Among themselves, they're wiser. They know that diversity would destroy Israel, so they don't allow it. Do you understand that? The white liberals who think they're building a new world order are delusional, usually Christian-based liberals. They are working hand in glove with Jews who know that the doctrine is false, but know that they see its utility in destroying the racial basis of white society. So they push it for us while having nothing to do with it in Israel. Let's read a few words of this Kenyan conservative writer who I've never heard of before, but Mar Winsing posted. He has a good line here. He says, "Democracy, to be successful, must be practiced by politically mature people among whom there is a consensus on the meaning of life within their society." We would also say, well, they have to be of the same race. And then that's necessary but not sufficient. Sufficient is they have to have wisdom. And the thing is, you can't get at this stuff directly. That's why there is really no such thing as good government. What there is government that is less bad than other kinds of government. The way you get at the best government, if you're trying to take a formal legal hack at it, is to exclude the crazier portions of the populace and to include those from which the intelligent and the best are drawn. That means basically white males who are heads of families and have money. Now, guaranteed, lots of them are going to be stupid. Lots of them are going to be corrupt, but there's no way around that. That's what they mean when they say there is no good system. But that's the best you can do, is limit the political decisions to that group of people. Unless you want to take your chances with a king. You know, but if you take your chances with a king, well, he might be good, or he might be bad. He might be really vicious, and you might have no protection against him. So that's the idea of a representative republic, is trying to, you know, okay, let's... you prove you have a stake in the community. You prove you have the wisdom to accumulate some money. You have a family. You're not a fly-by-nighter. You're a sane, stable, reasonable, rational person who has seen enough of life. Okay, we're going to give you a voice, or you're going to take a voice. And from your class, we are going to select the natural aristocracy that's going to run things. That's a good way to get at it. That's as good as you can do, essentially, when you're trying to live in a larger society. And really, maybe that's an argument for smaller societies. And that's what I always liked about the U.S., is that, you know, you could do things differently in different states. And this state could be a religious colony for Catholics, and this one could be for insane Protestants and Puritans, and this one could be kind of mixed, and this one could be, you know, Mormons. And it's nice to have different types of things, and they can all kind of peer over the hedges at each other and go, wow, look at those North Georgians. Look at that luscious mud they're stuffing into their maws. I might like to try a little of that. I wonder if we got anything over here in South Carolina that's worth eating. You know, you can look at what they're doing in different states, and you don't have one massive failure if someone goes about something the wrong way, and you know how prone people are to messing things up.
So let people, give them their freedom. Let them run things the way they want to run them and see what comes up. Maybe if they come up with some best practices, you can copy them. But if they do something bad, you're not so subject to it. And if they do something bad, their own people can leave. That's a good way to do things. And all you need to have in common is really a defensive alignment. You don't need to have standing armies. The U.S. is not prone to invasion because it's surrounded by water and Canadians. A vast mass of inert fluid, if there ever was one. The only border you have to worry about is the Mexican border. And that never gave us a problem. You just have to shoot them if they come across. So, he quotes Buckley some, talking back in the 60s about the fact that democracy tends to make everything accessible, and any kind of restriction is very opposed to the democratic spirit, which is, I am as good as you are. And this sort of egalitarianism or equalitarianism leads to, my opinion is as good as yours. Well, no, it isn't. You know, but that's something that ordinary people don't want to accept. They want to believe that everything is accessible, everyone's opinion is as good as anyone else's, and that belief lies in their head right along with, you know, well, but these opinions are hate. And they don't see any contradiction. It doesn't bother them. That's just the way things are. So, when you create a genuine democracy where pretty much anybody's allowed to vote, all you're really doing is allowing people with money to back the dictators, the demagogues of their own choice, and appeal to the rabble and get voted in that way, or dominate in the name of the rabble. And this is going to lead inevitably to people who are good liars rising to the top of politics, like Bill Clinton. It's going to lead to people who promise to give people things that are not even possible rising to the top. And once they've got the go-ahead to put these things in, like universal free health care, you're not going to be able to reverse it. I mean, we don't see government... Once government programs are created, they are rarely gotten rid of. So these are the problems of democracy. You know, it is not a political advance to take power from civilized white men with average IQs of 105, say, and turning it over to 70 IQ blacks. That's not progress. Only in the Jew-controlled media is that a good thing. Any sane white person, you know, oh, we've expanded the driving franchise. We're giving car keys to five-year-olds. Because, you know, after all, they have transportation needs. And their chubby little legs just won't carry them fast enough. We really need to give them some access to some modern transportation. Only an ageist would deny them. I mean, that transferred is precisely the insanity of giving the vote to retard. Don't even think of them as blacks. Imagine all these blacks were just retarded whites. Would that not be the height of folly? Imagine if 11 out of every 12 whites in a land were retarded. And here come the Jew media saying, give the retards the vote. You're anti-retardist. If you don't allow the 11 out of 12 to overvote you, they have needs. You must let them, you know, find their own leaders. I mean, this is precisely what's going on in Africa. To retard. Don't even think of them as blacks. Imagine all these blacks were just retarded whites. Would that not be the height of folly? Imagine if 11 out of every 12 whites in a land were retarded. And here come the Jew media saying, give the retards the vote. You're anti-retardist. If you don't allow the 11 out of 12 to overvote you, they have needs. You must let them, you know, find their own leaders. I mean, this is precisely what's going on in Africa. Let me read this again. This is just a test because we have a pop-up on the Simplecast thing, and it just came up. And I don't know if we missed out the last the last part of what I was saying. In the United States, the Founding Fathers set out to create a constitutional republic, not a pure democracy. At the time the Constitution was adopted, half of the white adult male population could not meet the property qualification for voting in elections. Because women could not vote, that meant that only 25% of the white citizens were entitled to vote. He says,
what he's talking about is that, look, where is it? Where's the ultimate statement of it? He refers to the here it is. The historical Anglo-Saxon tradition, that means a Germanic tribes tradition, of limiting the vote to that segment of the population that would be able to use it responsibly. Okay? Only let people vote who are able to vote responsibly. Now, responsibly is often a word abused by the left, in that only those who vote leftist positions are responsible, but what here it's used properly, i.e. the way I would use it, and it means that they are not voting to steal things from each other. They're not voting to liberate goods from their neighbors. They're not voting as you know, an advance auction of stolen goods, as Mencken called an election, i.e. vote for me and I will steal Bob's stuff and give it to you. They're voting to decide which direction their clan, their tribe, their community, their nation is going to go on certain important issues. It's not just materialist. What are you going to do for me? What can you give me? What can you steal for me? That's what he's saying. He's saying to the extent a class of the population can vote responsibly, it should be extended the vote. But if it can't vote responsibly, then deny it the vote. Now, this is an imperfect thing. You can't always tell. But his point is that over time, you know, different classes of the population may prove that they're able to exercise the vote responsibly, and so the franchise is extended to them. And in 1832, you know, he says, what does he say? He talks about British history, and he says, you know, it was only Charles Grey finally took over as a Whig Prime Minister in 1830. This is in Britain. He passed the Reform Act in 1832, which significantly expanded the percentage of male citizens who were allowed to vote. The 1832 reforms gave 1 in 5 adult males the right to vote. So there we go. In 1832 in Britain, only 1 in 5 males could vote, and only 1 in 2 in the U.S. could vote because they didn't meet the property qualification. So the franchise was restricted to that subset of the population that could handle voting, because it wasn't so greedy and selfish as the people are today. It was able to consider the longer term interests of the country. And again, we're talking degrees and absolute, not absolutes, because there is no class that's going to provide good leadership guaranteed. It's just there's a class that it's likelier to come from, and that class is white men who are adults, who are stable, who have property. They have a stake in the system. They're not voting to steal from other people. And they are truly considering what is in the best interest of the nation. Now, let's see. So the franchise has always been restricted. And the point here that this black Kenyan conservative writer is trying to make that is that blacks in Rhodesia, as elsewhere in sub-Saharan Africa or black Africa, were not ready to vote. The colonialists can pull out under Jewish media pressure. They can go home, but that in no way means that blacks are fit to take over. What's going to happen is when they take over, they're going to form one-man big chief states, and they're going to dominate all the minorities who are opposed to them, political factions, and they're going to disperse whatever goods they can steal and acquire to all of their followers to stay in power, and they're going to run it as a tyranny. And that's exactly what happened. He says, he talks about the way that whites in Zimbabwe and Rhodesia tried to bring blacks along. He says, by the mid-1970s, Rhodesia had proportionally the largest black middle class in Africa, and it was growing rapidly. This was despite the fact that Rhodesia was under UN economic sanctions, and the government was spending vast sums of money waging a war against Marxist terrorists who were based in neighboring Mozambique and Zambia. Despite those challenges, Rhodesia was a successful limited democracy, governed by the rule of law, having independent courts, and a multi-party system of government. The leader of the official opposition in Parliament was black, and he and other black members of Parliament were able to openly criticize Prime Minister Smith and his government for what they felt were their shortcomings. This was in stark contrast to the situation in the rest of Africa, where one-party dictatorial rule was the norm, and criticism of the president was equated with treason.
This is the system that they had that worked, that the international global Jewish media strove to undermine with their childish and their truly evil insistence on one man, one vote, even though those new men getting the vote were literally retarded. The Jews well knew that this would destroy Zimbabwe, would destroy Rhodesia, and it did. But their aim was not what was good for blacks in Rhodesia, it was what was good for Jews in Rhodesia. What was good for Jews is destroying whites. Destroying white society is good for Jews. That's why they follow the same policies there and in South Africa and here and in Australia and in England and across Europe. Exact same policies. Undermine people racially. The Jews don't talk about minority rights where whites are the minority. They only talk about minority rights where blacks are the minority. Where blacks are the majority, they talk about majority rule. You don't hear a peep about white minority rights now that blacks run Zimbabwe and South Africa. Jews could care less about that. Now let's see here. So what happened, we've gone into the specifics on the Jew thing, and then we've seen, my point is that in this thread about Zimbabwe, we have encapsulated the entire history of that country and the decline of white rule, that you can understand what is going on and who's causing it. And then we have updated about maybe once a week, or as events warrant, we post new telling information about the continuing devolution as examples of what I put up in the last few days. The government in 2000, story about new landowners face eviction. So the government in 2000 seizes, it seized like 4,000 white farms, well, and turned them over to blacks, but the blacks were incompetent, of course, being untrained and unskilled in farming. So the government has now reclaimed, about 1,500 of those farms that it had seized from the whites originally. And we talk about the annual inflation rate has reached 100,000%. And about his thugs going out and beating up people who are selling papers on the route to his house. I mean, that's a typical black African dictatorial behavior. And let's see, what else do we have? Yeah, as I said, 4 million Zimbabweans have now fled the country, and most of the 8 million remaining face extreme hardship. And, Washington, as usual, is pretending there's a political solution to this. Just vote in the right nigger and things will change. Well, they're all more or less like that. That's the problem. That's why whites had to run things separately. And they were nice enough to even try to grow, as the guy said. They grew a black middle class. They held blacks to positions and to freedom. They gave them freedoms that they could handle. It's just like a child. The child can handle this much. Well, that's what you give it. You don't give it more than it can handle. That's a recipe for failure, but that's exactly what is done. But see, even to talk about it that way is to act like the Jewback policy of one man, one vote was sprung from good motives rather than bad. It didn't spring from good motives. It sprang from anti-white motives. It sprang from Loxism, hatred of whites that Jews exhibit everywhere. Otherwise, if they didn't hate whites, they wouldn't lie about their history, and they wouldn't try to destroy their societies, would they? It's funny that they call us haters for telling the truth about Jewish behavior, whereas there is no word for Jews who lie about our behavior and our history. Yet another double standard. Yeah, Zimbabwean IQ is put at 66 by Richard Lynn, who's probably the foremost expert on IQ. 70 is considered retarded. So
That's the reason blacks are incapable of self-rule. Here's an example of how bad it actually is there, too. This is from Kathy Buckle. She says, moving away from the dollars, I went in search of ingredients usually found at a birthday party. Three major supermarket chains, which have outlets all over the country, were visited. The cake came first on my list, but there was no flour, sugar, margarine, baking powder, milk, or eggs in any of the supermarkets. Puddings and sweets were next on my list, but there was no jelly, instant pudding, custard, biscuits, or tarts to buy. Sandwiches, I thought, they are good for parties, but there was no bread or rolls, no spread, cheese, cold meats, or sandwich fillings to buy. What about a hot meal, I thought, but there was no maize meal, rice, pasta, or potatoes. So that idea was also a non-starter. This is how bad it is in February 2008 in Zimbabwe. It took 20 years of black rule to get to that situation from being the breadbasket of Africa under the whites. So... And then, you know, this is the kind of example of the news report we put on there to show you how things, while that's going on, while you can't find anything in the store, the leader of this country, Robert Mugabe, Western trained and educated, Christian raised, celebrates his 84th birthday by spending about $250,000 on a birthday party and releasing balloons, and there's funny pictures of it. Even while inflation has rose to 100,580% in January. So it's going absolutely crazy. And then we see that the Chinese have moved in and they've signed they're guaranteeing a loan so that Zimbabwe can move into phase two of a farm mechanization program. They're also trying to get into the mining. Zimbabwe is big on gold and platinum. It's one of the bigger sources of those. Chinese are trying to move in there, and Mugabe is what a lot of these clowns do, whether in South America or in Africa, is they try to nationalize these different industries and you know, say, okay, you can mine here, but you're going to give me and my party 50% of any royalties that you make from your mining. So this is the kind of stuff we track in white countries around the world. And there's a picture of some bananas and some black hands thumbing through these $500,000 notes. I mean, my God, how much longer can it go on? It really can't. I mean, the money is beyond counting. They show a little nigglet. There's a picture of a nigglet who begged this money. He's got about, you know, a couple feet thick of bills. I mean, that's how absolutely worthless the money is. And that can happen to the dollar. He's doing what our Fed is doing to our dollar, just at a slower rate. That's the scary part of it. And so we'll talk a little more. Let's play a little music and we'll come back. We'll talk a little more about what we're doing at VNN Forum, giving specific examples. Let's see what I got here. I'll play a little Blackhawk right now.
Hasn't done a thing that really has to mean she's going anywhere. I haven't seen it showing in her eyes, but I swear it must be there. I don't know why I feel it so strong, but I feel it just the same. I can't see a single storm cloud in the sky, but I sure can smell the rain. She'd still say I love you if I asked, but she never volunteered. Somehow what she never says means more than all the other words I hear. Still she should win an Oscar if she's lying when she says that nothing's changed. I can't see a single storm cloud in the sky, but I sure can smell the rain.
sometimes there are things a man just knows that he really can't explain. I can't see a single storm cloud in the sky, but I sure can smell the rain. I can't see a single storm cloud in the sky, but I sure can smell the rain.
Then they came along in their giant truck, and they knocked you down. You should have seen yourself lying there all broken. Whoa, gravity, it got you good.
Gravity by Rilo Kiley, or Rilo Kiley. Before that, we heard Sure Can't Smell the Rain by Blackhawk. I think I'm going to play a couple more, and then I'll come back. Let's see here. Yeah, here's a decent song. Well, he's sort of white.
By the way you popped your car sideways at a wooden mast. The other kind of person that believes in making out once, love them and leave them fast. I guess I must be dumb. I should have fucking put a horse in Trojan and some abuse. But it was Saturday night, I guess that makes it alright. You see, what have I got to lose? Money I could be when you drove me to the place where your horses run free. I felt a little ill when I saw all the pictures of the jockeys that were there before me. Believe it or not, I started to worry. I wondered if I had enough class. But it was Saturday night, I guess that makes it alright. You say, baby, I ain't got enough gas. Oh yeah.
My dog will always come through. All he asks from me is the food to give him strength. All he ever needs is love, and that he knows he'll get. So I love my dog as much as I love you. But you make the fate, my dog will always come through. All the pay I need comes a shining through his eyes. I don't need no cold water to make me realize that I love my dog as much as I love you. But you make the fate, my dog will always come through. Na 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 na. As much as I love you, but you make the pain, my dog will always come through.
Cat Stevens singing about his love for his dog. I guess cats and dogs really do mix. Before that, we heard Little Red Corvette by Prince. Let's see, what else did we hear? We heard Gravity by Rilo Kiley. I don't know if it's Relocate or Rilo. I see there's lots of debate over the thread. Melker set up a thread on Bill White and White Wheels in there, and we've already had a bunch of slugging matches going on there. I have more to say on that front. I've already said a lot of it, but I'm going to say some more. Anyway, let me get back to what I was talking about before last break. And we're not going to go too much longer here, maybe another half hour. That was my fourth or fifth lip smack in 2.5 hours. Is that average? Maybe that's a little more. I've been a little more conscious of that. Sometimes it happens, though. Let us see. Anyway, what I'm doing right now is what I can do, and that's trying to create a place where you can direct people that will get them up to speed on white nationalism the quickest way possible. Respectability and all that, I don't care. People will say, oh, you take the low road or it's gutter or whatever. If you look at it objectively, that's not the case. I mean, we have nothing indicating anything in particular what we believe, which is a nice, being neutral is one way to approach it from the outside. We will differentiate ourselves by the content of our threads and our posts, and maybe to some extent by our organization. So what I've done is up top, we have our cause, and in there we have, let's see, best white nationalist writing. We have specific directions on signing up. If you do not use an approved name, you will be deleted immediately, and that's been in effect for about 7 months now, and it works pretty well because it shows that most people trying to sign up are not that smart. They don't pay attention to the rules. An interesting fact is that most people who sign up for our forum, and I suspect true of all forums, never post. Why that is, I don't know. Presumably they sign up, they wait to register, they get distracted, and they never come back. Or they just sign up in order to be able to search, which I don't think you can do if you're on the outside. But they have their own reasons. But we are getting a higher percentage of people who sign up posting now, and that's because of the way we're going about this. We're smacking them and getting them to look up and realize, look, we want you to take a normal name. We don't allow you to take an elf name or a fantasy name or a historical
name. You have to take a normal name. No 1488 or other stuff like that. No White Warrior Princesses or Matt 1488. We don't want that kind of thing. This is an effort to make the forum more serious by, you know how when you wear different clothes you act differently? Well, it's kind of the same thing, and yet this in no way undermines your ability to speak freely. And we keep the spirit of the First Amendment alive, that we allow political speech to be free. That has nothing to do with pornography or cursing or anything like that. Those are style matters. We allow you to speak freely on the political stuff. That is unique, or at least very, very hard to find on the internet. So what we have up top is this just in a general discussion are probably the two main forums, and that's where we talk about the news of the day, and people can come here and get the white nationalist take on, see what they're talking about and what they think about the issues that everybody else is talking about. And that's what we want. We only want to distinguish ourselves from other forums and from other sites by our take on these issues, rather than by wacky symbols and the rest of the garbage. So that's more the news section of the site. We have opposing views, and then we have Europe. We have a lounge for flaming. We have Europe, and under there we have all the various countries, and we have the threads. Now, I went at length into what we have in Zimbabwe. We have also a lot on South Africa, and we have also a lot on Australia. And in Australia, I spent some time compiling all the radio shows. Now, these are not VNN people, but they do very good radio shows. One's called The Voice, and the other is Australia Calling. And in these two threads, you can get a number, you know, weekly or bi-weekly radio shows giving you an on-the-ground perspective on Australian news from the point of view of the white man. And you see how his interests are compromised. And yes, Australia is the same as America. It's run by Jews. They control the media there. And it's even worse there than here because they already have full GOI control. That is, they are full gun control. GOI control is the proper name for that. It's not about controlling guns. It's about controlling white men. The mark of the freeman has always been he gets to carry a rifle. And when that is taken away, then he's no longer a free man. He's a subject of a king, subject of a tyrant. And from Derek McThomas and The Voice, you can learn the facts about things in Australia. They look at it differently. They're worried about, you know, the Chinese coming in, the Lebanese and the Muslims coming in, rather than Mexicans. But the same basic idea is me bringing in these people to alter the ethnic makeup of the country and having this celebrated by the Jew-controlled political parties and media. All that's collected in one place and sticky, the important stuff, the ongoing news thread where you get the background and then you get the most relevant of the current news is all in one thread. And then below that we have just regular threads for people who want to start discussing certain topical things. So understand that anything that's stickied is more or less of an archive thread, and that means that it's edited and managed by me. And I will alter as I see fit to make it best for newcomers and for our own people to understand what's going on so that the whole picture comes together in as short a time as possible. It's always the mission and the motive behind what I do editorially. We have similar things, similar news threads and evergreen news threads in Russia. And I don't know if we have it in France yet, but in Germany also in England, which I've revised, but we pay particular attention to Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Australia. And as interest dictates, that is, we'll follow the path of organic growth. The more people are interested in something, we'll create first a thread and then a sub-forum if need be. So Africa, Australia, Russia, England would have a thread for Scotland. And if there were a huge explosion of news and interest in things Scottish, then we could turn that into a sub-forum itself. Usually we let interest determine how we evolve the forum, but we also sometimes create things, such as we created VNN Local, and we encourage you to post there and get to meet people in your local area. What I talked about earlier, the homeschooling family in Nebraska, the Conrads, and how they're part of a 6,000 family network. They exchange ideas and advice. They form an actual and virtual community. That's what whites need to be doing. Get to meet people. This online stuff is good. It's a first-rate way to spread information, but that alone is not enough. You have to turn it into real-world meetings and networks and even families, marriages, and children. and self-protection. And you can use what we have as material to educate the new people that you meet and bring into your circle. These circles are what will protect you in the case of a breakdown. So this is the value of having an online forum. We also have an exchange and emporium that Tom Winicki asked me to set up. I believe he's creating an online store, and he's going to link to it through through VNN. And not saying exclusively, but he's going to promote his products through there. And I will be posting some stuff in there also. And if you want to exchange stuff, it doesn't have to be buy and sell. You can trade or just simply show what you have that someone else might want. I have some white literature I'll probably show in there. And I also took some pictures. I have a box of books I shipped to myself from East Germany when I was over there in the late 80s and 87. And I didn't know if they'd arrive, but they did. They're cheap Marxist rubbish literature, but they're interesting. And I took some photos of the fronts of them just so you see the kind of stuff they had, and you see how it was very anti-U.S. and anti-capitalist and Marxist theory, and it's kind of interesting stuff. And I'll be posting those probably in the books section on VNN. So what else have we done? I simplified, I weeded out the religion and left it with history and religion. And those of you in CI can go in there. I detest CI personally. I think it's ridiculous, and I don't want it anywhere except the lounge or in the history and religion section. And we I folded in the classical art and architecture and the positive Christianity into that because they weren't being used enough to justify being independent. And again, that's an organic thing. And also, I've created, in addition to the archives of our best writing and the country thread, news threads and background threads, we've got enemies, and that's where we list the people who are directly coming after us, and we list them by name and by organization. We don't go after imaginary things like, you know, lizards. We don't go after insiders, and we don't go after elites, you know, and anything that's safely abstract. When you talk in terms of abstractions, then you're avoiding the real world fact that ideas are put into power via carriers. Who are the carriers of these ideas? Who are the ones implementing them and executing them? Well, they're Jews. The inspiration and driving power behind communism, and communism, a variant of it, is what we have in America today. And so we differentiate ourselves from both the libertarians and the paleoconservatives, the cowardly right, and from the John Birch Society, the false fronts, and the Amerinds, who refuse to name the people who are causing all this. And that we do name the SPLC, the ADL, Heidi Beirich, the woman in Kansas, the state senator, I forgot her name, Schemick, who are deliberately pushing policies that destroy white families, white neighborhoods, and white nations. We name them. We attack them. We go after them. We show you who is putting the hurt to us. That's all in the enemies forum, which is within, it's a sub-forum under opposing views. We also have within one of my favorite subsets, one of my favorite subjects is media criticism. And as you've heard me say before, there are three schools of thought. There's a leftist school, the rightist school, and the white school. The rightist school is the conservatives blaming liberals for media bias. The leftist school says the problem with media is it's owned by giant corporations, and that power and money that they have ought to be turned over to the state, so the state can create media that reflect the will of the people. It's ridiculous. Then there's the white school, which is the correct school, which emphasizes that Jews control the media. And in fact, they don't pursue profits primarily as their first and overriding goal, as the leftists claim. They pursue politics. Perfect example of that is Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ, which the Jews did everything in their power not to get the rights to the story and make the $1 billion off it, but to deny its being made. They did everything they could to prevent its distribution and to mess up its production, because they are not, in fact, first interested in profits, and the movie made huge profits. They are interested in politics and the Jewish agenda. The leftist school is wrong, but because it controls the high points, it can't ever be forced to answer honest rational arguments, except in the subforum called media criticism. And I have stickies in there for the three different schools, and I've only just begun that. I've only added a little, but in one I have the white school. I have William Pierce's essay on Who Controls America. I have the essays on Who Controls the Media in other places. I still haven't added all of them, but there's Britain and Sweden have their own. I have stuff from Radio Islam talking about this. I have the Jews themselves writing about Jews controlling the industry, whether it's Ben Stein or Philip Weiss. Both of them have written extensively about Jewish predominance in Hollywood and the media. And they're saying essentially the same things that William F. Buckley is saying. They're just drawing different conclusions. So an honest outsider coming to this can quickly get up to speed and say, hey, all these people are saying the same thing. They may have different conclusions about it. They may not feel the same way. You know, the Jewish conclusion is, yeah, Jews control the media, so what? William Pierce's conclusion and my conclusion and the white conclusion is Jews control the media and they're using it to drive whites to genocide. And specifically on that point, we've created a new forum up top under the executive summary called Jews, the White Family's Worst Enemy. And in there, we give in real simple terms specific examples of how Jews go about destroying sons and daughters and families and communities through their power over the law and its interpretation and the courts and through their media. So these are all places you can direct people where they may be disturbed by the information they find, but they're not going to be bothered by the form of it. They're not going to be bothered by swastikas or crosses or any other garbage symbols. And I'm not saying those two are garbage symbols, but just I don't like symbols or jewelry in general. That and not any attempt to escape being tied to something the Jews have made hated explains why I do what I do. I don't like jewelry. I don't like symbols. I don't respond to the swastika any more than I respond to the Christian cross. I just don't like them. I happen to like that bird. That's why I use that bird. Beyond that, I want it to be plain, clear, and simple and direct. Bald, almost. And so, in Jews, the White Family's Worst Enemy, if you refer someone here, I have sticky threads. And again, when you see a sticky, you who are listening in Vienna, that doesn't mean you can't post. It means I only want you to post good material in there. I don't really want you commenting on stuff. Or if you do, I want you commenting with the understanding that I may later delete that. Because these are essentially archive threads, where if something doesn't further the mission of that thread, it's going to be deleted or edited in a way to make it valuable. Because most of the commentary, the main two, main discussion and this just in, are for news and discussion and topics, and so is the lounge. But these sticky threads are stickied for a very specific reason. This is archival evergreen material that is intended to get someone up to speed as quickly as possible at this late date. So, I have in Jews, the White Family's Worst Enemy, Jews driving Christianity out of the schools. That's a great concern for a lot of people. Jews retail history's biggest lie. I talk about how they use the Holocaust to intimidate whites and inculcate guilt in them. I talk about Jews normalizing sexual perversion. That was a thread started by Sir William Robert. He's got lots of examples of the Jews involved with the homos, the faggots, like we talked about last week, and with in relation to spreading what's the word? Precocious sexuality, early sexuality, early promiscuity. I have another thread, Jews Behind Sexualization of Kids, where we discuss Bratz dolls. These sort of urban slut, multicultural urban slut dolls that are aimed at little kids. And we talk about the Iranian Jew who's behind that. So, it's all in line with my line, which is, you know what, American, white American, you hate Jews, you just don't know it yet. When you say you hate liberals, what you really hate is Jews. When you say you hate the sexual perversions, what you really hate is Jews. When you say you hate, you know, your daughter's being encouraged to be promiscuous and lipstick lesbians and what have you, what you really hate is Jews. They're the ones producing these campaigns to get people acting like this. It's not the damn Amish who control the media. The Jews themselves admit that they control the media. Many of them.
Well, what are they doing with that control? Well, they say they're doing good things. Or they say they're just giving the people what they want. People don't know what they want. A lot of times, they'll take what they're fed and assume that's normal because they don't have a lot of brains or imagination. Well, if the people are led improperly, they're going to go down the wrong track. And that's exactly what the problem is with this country. All the leaders are Jews. And the whites you see who appear to be leading are, in fact, simply the puppets of these Jews because they're operated, they're coin-activated by their money. The Jews are the major donors to the Democrats and the Republicans. We have, for example, in our enemies thread, we don't worry about the state or these ghostly, you know, New World Order insiders. We give you the specific names of the Jews behind, for example, John McCain. And we point out what they're doing and who they are and where they live. These are the people who have messed America up. And, you know, one final example that we have, Sticky, Jews behind obscene and degenerate rap and hip-hop. You know, that crap that your kids listed, where does it come from? Who produces it? How does it get out there? How come nothing with a white nationalist or a pro-white message ever gets out, yet blacks can rap on and on about killing whites, killing cops? Where does that come from? Well, it's entirely Jewish. Jews own the big music companies. They're the ones promoting this stuff. You need to know that. You hate Jews. You just don't know it. You think you hate liberalism, but what you really hate is Jews. Every symptom, everything that you hate, you think you hate open borders? No, what you really hate is Jews. They're the ones who open the borders. All the things that you hate about what America's become are traceable to the Jews, their organizations, and their agenda. And that is the purpose of this forum, to lead you to understand and to have you pass the URL around to other people so they understand, and the MP3s of this show, so that they can listen to this and get up to speed themselves and be truly sophisticated. And not simply stick with the wireless, silly, childish Fox crowd where you never get to the root of anything. And it's all a matter of striking attitudes and being tough. Being tough meaning turning your wallet and your boy over to Israel. Is there any other feature of the forum I haven't discussed that's important? Let's see here. Oh, I like it. You know, it's now about 4:48 by my watch, and we still have, you know, significant light. The spring is coming, people. Just hold on. Another month and we'll be there. I really like it when there's more light in the days. Winter gets so tiring. I really envy people who don't live in winterious areas. We have VNN Forum also features Flamingos, Key West's gayest bar. Yeah, how about that? That's a twist on Key West, which is famous for having a bunch of schwul, as the Germans say. That schwul means like sticky, like sultry. So it also means like fag. So that's like a gay bar. That's where if you want to be gay and put forward really queer, useless shit, go in there and do it. So we move stuff into the lounge that is all personal flaming and all that kind of garbage to keep the main stuff clear and available to both. We don't allow people to flame in any of our archived or sticky threads. And if they do, we move the stuff, we delete it, and we ban them temporarily or permanently. And what more do we have? Well, we have our own unique broadcasting under our activism section in the Vanguard broadcasting area. We have Goy Fire, Original White Music, Aryan Matters, and the Hawthorne Report, and Free Talk Live, which we do 2-3 times a week for the last year plus. We have my show, Radio Estina, which I'm recovering from some health problems, so this is the second show I've done since like September of last year, but I'll probably do another one Thursday of this week and try to do it 2 days a week going forward. See, what I like to do, and I haven't really done today, is have material prepared from books to talk about, and unfortunately I don't, I am not up to speed to where I can lead another discussion on that today, but I will probably do that Thursday because
I just have to read a little bit more about Oklahoma to be able to properly guide a talk about that. We already had the first time last time we read the introduction of The Secret Life of Bill Clinton, and I said I was going to do more today, but we're running out of time here, so we're not going to do it. We'll save that for probably Thursday. And those of you I know want to hear more about the Nameless War, we will get back to that eventually, just as we will get back to Libido Dominandi. And by the way, I had an email from E. Michael Jones in response to something I'd written him, and he said he expects to have copies of The Revolutionary Jew, his new book, by May. And I know that he has excerpted or run full chapters of his book in his magazine, Culture Wars. You can learn about that at culturewars.com. He's a traditional Catholic. For those of you who are looking for gifts or looking for a traditional Catholic take on things that is not racist, it's not white nationalist or racialist. In fact, it's opposed. But he's strong enough to stand against the Jews where they are wrong, although he truly does not have a deep understanding of what a Jew is. He just believes it's a non-Catholic. But he's excellent in the history he unearths and the patterns he finds and analyzes that are he's a very smart guy. A lot of these patterns you wouldn't necessarily see on your own. You certainly wouldn't learn them in college because you wouldn't be reading the right material and you wouldn't be having it filtered through the right people. Jones is a one-man college education. If you read his book, Libido Dominandi, you will understand things. And I've lectured extensively based on that material. And I do mean lectured. I'm a pretty didactic fellow when left to my own devices. So we will get back to that book too. It's a wonderful book. And we've only done a little out of it. And at great length. So it could take 100 years, but we'll keep working our way through it and developing your understanding. And I have not finished the Radio Astina archive at VNN, but every show that I do on here will have links to the material I discussed in that show. It will have the date of the show. I may begin a numbering system. I didn't have a name for the show until last fall. I came up with a name after I'd already done a bunch, and I think I called it Linda Radio before Radio Astina. I'm going to rename them all Radio Astina and probably number them just with a simple 1, 2, 3, so that each show will have a unique date and a unique number to it, and we'll have all linked associated material, and that will be in one thread, and that thread will be found under Vanguard Broadcasting, under the activism section and the Radio Astina subforum. So Astina, in case you're new and you haven't heard, that's the opposite of Pravda. Pravda is ideological truth. It's the truth of the Communist Party. It's the truth of the liberal fantasist. Istina is the opposite. It's the real truth, the factual truth, the biological truth, the street-level truth. So this, I am giving you the street truth. I'm not giving you liberal horseshit about how all men are equal and one man, one vote. I'm telling you the reality that you will not get in any college classroom unless Dietrich's teaching. You might get a soupçon of reality where Dietrich's teaching. And maybe a few other teachers that we have at VNN. But in general, you will not get this stuff in any college. I guarantee you that. It's worth far more than what you will hear in any college. And that's why we do it. And let's see. I just want to encourage you in general before we sign off here. I'll play probably another 3-4 songs and we'll call it a day. I didn't even really have anything to talk about overly today, and we've gone 3 hours. The time goes so quickly because I can pick a point at random and just talk for hours on it, because all this stuff, and this is my purpose, is to show you the interrelation between it. It's all interrelated. It all plays in. That's why it's worth going at length into Zimbabwe, because the story of Zimbabwe is the story of U.S. The actors are basically the same. They may be there in different degrees and in different numbers, but all the players are interacting in more or less the same way. What happened there can happen here. So we have to take pains to show you, look, it's like seeing a progressive series of photos of the decomposition of internal organs as they're eaten by cancer. How's that for an analogy? And you've got 4-stage, you know, pancreatic cancer. Is there a 5th stage, doc? No, there isn't. Yeah, you're underground.
There's a sixth stage. It's a six-foot stage. And this is what Zimbabwe is. I mean, when you go to the store and there's basically nothing but creamed eels left, I mean, you're pretty far gone. We're not to that stage yet. And the simple dailiness and, oh, we see faces, we hear noises. You know what? This can obscure the truth, the long-term picture, the time-lapse photography. That's what I'm here to provide, pointing out historical examples. It might as well be time-lapse photography of what goes on in a white society that gives in to the Jews and allows them to claim that these mud races are our equals. Well, over time, that progressive, that is a disease. And as that disease progresses, you get to the level of South Africa, and then you get to ultimately to Zimbabwe, where there aren't any whites left, and the niggers are back to the way it used to be 200 years ago before the white man showed up. They're just starving to death, running around in loincloths, flipping rocks for grubs. So my intention here is, and I'm gonna, I have never truly devoted myself to building up VNN Forum and nurturing it, and that is what I'm doing right now. For whatever reason, that's what I feel good and healthy, and I feel is most useful. I write sometimes, I respond to stuff, but right now I'm organizing this stuff, and I'm arranging it to have something that perhaps can serve as the basis for a PR organization, which is a slightly different take on a membership group that people could belong to if I can get the right people in place. And I want you all to think about that. But in the meantime, you use these shows, pass out these MP3s to your friends, burn them onto discs, and they make good travel stuff, because we tend to get into this stuff fairly deeply, and it's not like what you hear in the radio. We're not interrupted every 5 minutes by ads. We can actually discuss things at length, these shows and on Goyfire, which is our panel discussion show, and it's stuff that people need to hear, because it gives them the why that the conservatives, that people who would otherwise be attracted to us, are denied by Fox News and Chronicles and Amren. All those sites will never give the white person the why. The white person needs the why more than anything in the world, because without the why, you can't get to the solution. It's not a problem if there's a solution, but it is a problem if you don't know what's causing it. You can't solve something unless you know the cause of it, most times. 9 times out of 10, you can't solve something without knowing what is causing it. Well, we are the one place on the internet you can go and you can get a direct, bold, bald statement of the facts, the Istina reality of the political camps doing war. And the real battle is white versus Jew. This is deliberately obscured, clouded, and disguised by the media as part of the war of the Jew against the white, using the black, using the Mexican, using the feminist. And with that, I think I'm done yapping for today. If you have any questions at all about what I've said about VNN Forum or what we are trying to do with it, with our team, let me know. When we start these shows, when they're live, there's always a thread going where we have the links, and you can post in there. You can send me material you'd like me to discuss along with specific questions. I love that. Sometimes I don't have... What I like to do is when I read something and I get particularly fired up on a topic like I did last show and I really wanted to discuss it, I wasn't like that today. I didn't have anything that particularly stuck out to me. There were a few things I generally wanted to talk about, mostly more in-house stuff like I just have in this last segment here. But if there are specific news items you want me to talk about and put in the proper context, or things that you don't understand or would like to hear explained on tape, let me know. We love feedback. You can always reach me at alinder@kvmo.net. You can leave me a PM on the forum. Sign up under a normal name. We'll be here. So copy and distribute the URL. Let people know about our show. I think I will be back on Thursday. My goal is to do the show 2 times a week for a few hours in the afternoon rather than at night. But you can also catch me on Dietrich's show on Friday and often enough on Stan's show on Monday. Those are the other two shows we have going full time right now, and then along with this one. So thanks for listening today, and I'll see you out with I'm going to play 4 songs, and when the 4th one's done, I'm going to turn off the broadcast. So Let's see what we want to play. And you know I tend to flip from one thing. Sometimes I change my mind. I want to play. Alright, I'll tell you what. I'm going to play a Cat Stevens song, a UB40 song, General Public, and then we're going to end with True Blue in memory of Yankee Jim. Our departed and beloved comrade, a true fighter for the white race and a real activist that people can pattern themselves on. So those four songs are going to do it. First up will be Cat Stevens with First Cut is the Deepest, then General Public singing Tenderness, extended mix. Red Red Wine by UB40 after the Cat Stevens, then General Public Tenderness, and then True Blue, and that will see us out. So good night and good luck. This is Alex Linder signing off Radio Astina. Bye.
I would have given you all of my heart, but that someone is torn it apart, and she's taken almost all that I've got. But if you want, I'll try to love again. Baby, I'll try to love again, but I know.
The first cut is the deepest. Baby, I know the first cut is the deepest. 'Cause when it comes to being lucky, she's good. Baby, I'll try to love again, but I know the first cut is the deepest. Baby, I know the first cut is the deepest. But when it comes to being lucky, she's cursed. When it comes to loving me, she's worse. But when it comes to love, she
true blue. Don't say you've gone. Say you've knocked off for a smoker, and you'll be back later on. Hey, true blue. Hey, true blue. Give it to me straight, face to face. Are you really disappearing? Just another dying race. Hey, true blue. True blue. Is it me and you? Is it mom and dad? Is it a cockatoo? Is it standing by your mate when he's in a fight? Or just Vegemite? True blue, I'm asking you. Hey, true blue, can you bear the load? Will you tie it up with wire just to keep the show on the road? Hey, true blue. Hey, true blue. Now be fair dinkum. Is your heart still there? If they sell us out like sponge cake, do you really care? Hey, true blue. True blue. Is it me and you? Is it mom and dad? Is it a cockatoo? Is it standing by your mate when she's in a fight?